Good morning. Can you hear me okay? Okay. My name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Lisa. By the grace of a loving God, I've been continuously sober since June the 15th of 1986. And for that date, I'm truly grateful. And I always say this, that I was taught early in AA that you don't be grateful, you do grateful. And I try to do that. Thank you. This is intimidating. Really is. It's, oh, yeah. You try it sometime. Yeah. I'm speaking in front of a lot of my heroes, and that's intimidating. You know, that's rough. But I'm grateful to be here, and it's certainly an honor. You know, isn't this an amazing deal? It really is. We've been to four of them, and to me, it's about the best we've been to. I really am having a great time here. And I just really quickly, in the last 14 months, Juanita and I have been able to travel overseas and for AA and Al-Anon and do some things. And I've been to Russia. Is JR in here? I don't know if he made it. Anyway, I've been to Russia, both Moscow and Siberia, doing the traditions and the steps. And then Juanita and I spent almost a month in Australia. And the people in those countries were so kind to us and so generous to us. And I was just so moved, you know, by being in both places. And to be here with some of them, Sanjay's here, to be here with some of them is just such a thrill for me. I just can't tell you. And we are definitely worldwide. And I'm so, you know, honored to be a part of that, a small part of that. Anyway, so I took a bunch of notes that I'm just going to throw away. I've been thinking a lot about a lot of things since they asked me to do this. And, you know, we've had several panels on anonymity already. And I know we've talked about, you know, anonymity in the digital age and all of that. And, but the theme of this one was that it's the spiritual foundation, you know, of our program. And I think it goes beyond just not, you know, speaking our last names, that kind of thing. Dr. Bob once said that to be anonymous within the fellowship is breaking the tradition of anonymity. And he talked about above and below the level of press, radio, and film. And I think we've lost that. You know, I think that for some reason or another, you know, we don't give our names, both names, in the setting of just an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. The problem with that, though, for me, is that they record these things. And so they get sent out on the Internet, and, you know, they go all over the world, and you don't know who's listening to them. So that is, you know, if I give you both my names from this platform, I believe I'm breaking my anonymity at that public level. That's just what I believe. Not everyone does. I was taught that by one of my mentors, and so I stick to that. So having said that, I'm going to go to the source book. Are you timing me?
Yes,
I hope
I
you are. Nisa and I knew her name, and it turns out we know people in common in New York, and it's great to be here with her. And Beth and I are part of the same fellowship in Colorado, and it's great. Great to be here and make new friends. In the foreword to the first edition, we started out with the reason for anonymity. It is important that we remain anonymous because we are too few at present to handle the overwhelming number of personal appeals that may result from this publication. Being mostly business and professional folk, we could not well carry on our occupations in such an event. We would like it understood that our alcoholic work is an avocation, and I hope to speak to that. An avocation, you know, we had to look a lot of this stuff up. I'm a big book technician. I'm a big book mechanic. I am. And I've done it for a long time. And so the verbiage in the big book is, a lot of it is 1930s stuff, and I don't even think you would have heard these words on the street in the 1930s. So we've had to look them up, okay? And you know, I'm a high school and college dropout, so I needed to look a lot of this stuff up. And turns out avocation is a hobby or a non-paid, you know, endeavor that you do. When writing or speaking publicly about alcoholism, we urge each of our fellowship to omit his personal name, designating himself instead as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that apparently, which was probably written in 1938, is the original reason for anonymity. But then, years later, in the early 50s, once we had, you know, close to 20 years of experience, the long form of the 12th tradition reads, "And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility." The way I was taught by my mentors to read the big book is to take the statements in the book and turn them into questions. And so I have to ask myself, am I practicing, do I practice a genuine humility in my life, you know? And the answer is not always, you know, not always. In fact, not most of the time. And I want to hit on some of that. This to the end, that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. Okay? You know, it's funny, you get, I do a lot in AA, and I travel, and I speak, and I do a lot of things, and, you know, you get caught up in a lot of that, and it's real easy if you have an alcoholic ego and an alcoholic personality to think you're all that, you know, because of what you do. And I was at a meeting in Nashville a week and a half ago, and it just hit me how easily I forget. I've been sober 29 years, and how easily I forget where I came from. You know, I often think that AA is the spiritual path of degradation. You know, there's a line that says we were driven here under the cruel lash of alcoholism. And I was, baby, and I just crawled here. You know, against all odds, I got sober. Should have died many, many times. And, you know, I forget that it was God and Alcoholics Anonymous that literally saved my life, my physical life. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. How can you forget that? You know, how can you get so pumped up with yourself that you forget where you came from? And, you know, that brings me back to center. So I wanted to throw some of this out. Since I was asked to do this, I've been looking at anonymity and the Internet a lot. And, you know, a lot of us are, I guess we can't say it, but it's social media, shall we call it. And, you know, we put things on there, and I do too, and I think it can be a great device for communicating with one another. I mean, used properly, it certainly can. But it can also be a way to break our anonymity at the public level, and I have done that, you know, and I regret that. And there's another piece with it. You know, I put things on social media, and I go, well, people in AA will know what I'm talking about. But the real truth is, almost everyone knows what I'm talking about. Even though I don't say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, almost everyone who reads that stuff knows that. And, you know, I was talking to Jerry, one of our great, great mentors, Tom I from North Carolina, just one of the finest men I ever met in my life. When Don P., my sponsor, died, you know, I had questions about the traditions, and I would call Tom because he was the go-to guy, you know. And I was sponsoring a kid in prison, and this kid wanted to, he was going before the parole board, and I was going to write a letter to the parole board, and I didn't know if that was quite kosher. And I called Tom, and he explained some things to me, and it wasn't just a simple thing. It was, he said, don't do that, first of all, because you'd be breaking your anonymity at the public level because there's a public record of that. He said, but there's other things that you can do, and he explained that. And he said, you know, Tom, you know, there's oftentimes we break a tradition, but sometimes we're not breaking a tradition, but we're bumping one really hard, you know? And, well, that's something to think about, you know? Do I want to bump a tradition, you know? I mean, do I want to bump a tradition in the fellowship that saved my life and the fellowship that I want to be here for my children and grandchildren? And I have 8 grandkids that the only reason I even know them is because my life was saved in AA. Anyway, No, I don't. I don't want to do that. I want to be a better AA, and I want to protect our tradition of anonymity, you know, but I don't want to be so anonymous that that people don't know who I am. I fly on airplanes a lot, and I oftentimes someone will say, where are you going? I say, I'm going to a conference. They say, what kind? I say, well, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. And that oftentimes, you know, leads into a really deep discussion about someone they know or maybe their own problem. Dick knows this. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I was sitting in the Albuquerque airport one day talking to a sponsee on the phone, trying to keep my voice down, trying to use my inside voice, right? Juanita tells me all the time, you've got to shut up. You've got to be quiet. Your voice carries, you know. And I was trying not to do that, but I'm talking to this sponsee up in Denver, and he's just a basket case. And finally I hung up the phone, and I was sitting next to a woman, and she goes, oh, can I ask you something? Are you a counselor or a sponsor? And I said, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean, you know, to speak so loudly that, you know, I interfered with your space. And she said, no, no, no. She said, I heard everything you said. And she said, I'm from Dallas. And, you know, I was a member of Al-Anon, and I should get back to Al-Anon. And proceeded to tell me this long story about how everyone she'd ever known was an alcoholic, and every relationship she'd ever been in was an alcoholic. So was that a good thing or a bad thing? You know, I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. One of the things, you know, when JR and I were in Russia, we were asked a lot of questions about the traditions. And one of the things we came up with is there's nothing in stone. You know, we break the traditions all the time. Almost every meeting does. But the point is we have them to come back to. They're our ideal that we always try to come back to, and that's our saving grace. So, anonymity in my own life. How much time do I have? Oh, okay. You know, I was with a sponsee yesterday, and we were walking the distances that you walk here, and he said, you know, I need to put a bag over your head in order for us to get to point A to point B. He said, because you just know everyone, you know, and they all want to stop and talk to you and this and that. And, you know, and that feels good. And I know a lot of people, there are people here that I love deeply in this room, and I want you to know that you know who you are. And, you know, from going to having not one friend in the entire world, you know, other than your business partner who you were stealing from, to having friends, real friends all over the world is just a fabulous thing. I mean, you just can't, you know, there's no descriptive words for that. But there's a problem with that. You know, we have a Native American man that we really love in Colorado, and he's, I'll apologize for my profanity. Everybody's been doing that all weekend, so I guess but he always says, the ego always gets you where you think you have your shit together. Okay? Where you think you got it going on, that's where the ego's going to get you after you've been here a while. And, you know, it's so difficult balancing some of this, you know. I speak quite a bit. A lot of people know me. Does it pump me up? You bet it does. You know, when I go through this thing and, you know, people are waving to, oh, I haven't seen you in 20 years. I haven't seen you in 15 years. Do I get pumped up with that? I do. You know, I do. And, you know, Paul Martin, who was my grand sponsor, he died 4 or 5 years ago with 63 years of sobriety, and he said from the podium, when people speak from the podium, he said, if they say that they do it for any other reason than ego and self-aggrandizement, watch them, because they'll lie to you about other stuff, too. You know? And I don't like that. You know, I don't like that part of it, you know, But I was taught years ago that the ego is a bully, and you can't bully a bully. But sometimes you can trick it, and you can use the ego in service of God. And that's what I keep trying to come back to that and trying to come back to that, you know. And so I'll finish with this. I think it's on page 19 that it gives us our marching orders, you know, and it says, a much more important demonstration of our principles, and what they're saying is more important than just getting sober. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. Okay? When people see those changes, that speaks much louder than anything we could ever say. That's where the rubber meets the road. And this last week, I had a real come to Jesus with my youngest kid, you know. And, you know, it was pretty brutal. I'll just tell you, it was really brutal, you know. And she sat there and read me the Riot Act. And she said, you know, all these people in AA think you're so great, and you have four children, and they don't even know you. 29 years sober, okay. And so I had to look at what have I been doing? You know, what have I been missing? You know, am I doing this in my home and in my home, you know, in my family, and in my various occupations and affairs, you know, am I practicing these principles there, you know, where it's most needed? And so, you know, 26 years ago, one of my mentors, and she's sitting right here, she said to me, I've been here a while and I've watched them come and I've watched them go. And the bottom line is you grow or you go. And hopefully I'm still growing. And I'm really glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tom. And I'd like to give you our next speaker, Nancy G. from Wisconsin.
Oh, this isn't so bad. My name is Nancy. I am an alcoholic.
Nancy.
My sobriety date is July 28th, 1986. My home group is the Sunlight of the Spirit group, fondly known as SOTS. I knew that was coming. We meet on Monday and Wednesday night at Plymouth Congregational Church in Madison, Wisconsin. Please join us if you're ever in the area. And as is clear, there are people here from my home group today, also from the Madison area, my area, Area 75, Southern Wisconsin. I'm happy to see them and certainly other friends I've come to know over the years. My husband always says when I speak that I sound like I'm going to cry, and it's because I am. But hopefully I'll get settled in here. I did make some notes because I think this is a little different than telling my story. We've got 20 minutes. I'm supposed to talk about a specific topic, you know, and it's an important one. Anonymity, our spiritual foundation. One of the hardest parts of it is if I have to repeat the word anonymity several times in 20 minutes. I don't know why you guys do that to newcomers. We have them read the traditions at meetings, and they're just full of words. They don't know what they mean, and they can't pronounce them. But anyway, here we are. So I also do want to thank Jim M., our public information coordinator at GSO, for the invitation to share with you today on this topic, and I certainly thank God for making it possible for me to be here to do this. It is a wonderful opportunity, no matter how intimidating it is. As Tom said. Tom, thanks for your share. Most of us certainly in AA certainly believe in the concept of anonymity, but what it means to us as individual members and groups and other levels of the general service structure certainly varies greatly. Some of us think of it as simply a privacy issue with the last name. Some of us think of it as protection for the fellowship as a whole. Some of us think of it as a core spiritual principle, and I think all that's true for me. All those interpretations are true for me. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was suffering from a very bad case of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. It was a good day when I could say in a meeting, my name is Nancy and I'm an alcoholic. Mustering more than that was impossible. A friend of mine who I still know to this day, who I was in treatment with, referred to me as catatonic. I was pretty humiliated and withdrawn in my new world without alcohol. And I hid out in AA. I went to a lot of meetings. I hung out in clubhouses. I went to a lot of AA events, and I stayed hidden for some time. Fortunately, I didn't remain hidden for too long. Through the help of loving sponsorship and other friends in the program, I found a way out of that, and I grew in my spiritual life through the steps and the traditions. I came to understand that there was much more to the concept of anonymity than simply not using my last name. But for myself as a newcomer, and I believe for many others of us who come to AA in the same condition I was in, to remain personally anonymous to whatever degree I chose in the beginning is certainly fair. Our name proclaims that privilege, Alcoholics Anonymous, and we have to respect that for people who come in. Another part of anonymity that I think is very important is confidentiality. Many of us have heard the horror stories of someone sharing personal information about other people and having that compromised by name or by inference, and I have sponsored a couple women who came to me as a result of that happening, that their sponsors had shared things about that they felt were in confidence and then had been betrayed. I once read somewhere, must have been in a Grapevine article probably, that alcoholics sit down with gossip as grandmothers sit down with knitting, or good at it. And and it's very true. It's very true. But that form of gossip has deadly implications, We alcoholics are a sensitive bunch, and particularly those fresh from a bottom, I think that that compromise of what little faith we have in AA when we first get here can be fatal. That's just self-centered kind of communication, and it promotes disunity, and I think that can be very, very harmful. The idea that I know something that you don't know has some power in it, and we use that. We use that. It's a way of elevating ourselves, I think, setting us apart and above each other, and we just can't do that. Early on, I had great difficulty sharing in a meeting, and it took some time before I fully trusted my sponsor. And to have that trust betrayed in the beginning may have seriously threatened my sobriety. The essence of anonymity is found in the we concept that permeates the spiritual principles right from step one. And we learn that this allows us to recover altogether with the grace of God in a safe environment. As we read in the big book, we are all children of God and all have the right to be here. So we come to believe in step two that true power, not that kind of false power I was just referring to, as a spiritual power based in a relationship with God. This dependence on my higher power is strongest when I maintain an attitude of humility, and humility is expressed in anonymity. I once read that humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. And I do appreciate that. That sticks with me. The book tells me we crawl before no one, but at the same time, we have to realize we're not in charge. And that's where the spiritual growth comes for me. Through step three, I get to practice this daily. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. If I am truly allowing God to direct my thoughts and actions in all areas of my life is good, and I will no longer feel the need to claim credit for that. And that, too, is the essence of anonymity. I will remain grateful for the gifts that I receive, and I will remain willing to express that gratitude through self-sacrifice and action. I love this line that I read, too. The spiritual substance of anonymity is self-sacrifice. The spiritual substance of anonymity is self-sacrifice. It's very simple, but it's so true. So I may need to give up something to get the rewards. Isn't that what this is all about, risk and reward? I take actions I don't believe in order to get the rewards I see expressed in you, that I learned from you from the beginning. And I can be of service. I can be of service no matter what the situation, without expecting something in return, such as love or admiration or congratulations for doing it. I don't even have to want to do it. Just says that I should. And it works. And I get the rewards. I get to spend time with people like you. I get to meet people like you. I get to share my life, and a purposeful life that it's become. I'm so grateful for that. So it is all about humility, and step 7 is all about humility. Basic ingredient is a desire to seek and do God's will, and that was certainly missing in my drinking days. The ego deflation necessary to be of maximum service to God and others comes to us through living a life based in the steps, traditions, and, yes, even the concepts. As Bill W. said, in a spiritual sense, anonymity amounts to the renunciation of personal prestige as an instrument of policy. Anonymity amounts to the renunciation of personal prestige as an instrument of general policy. That tells me that I have to do this in all my affairs. Tom talked about that. You know, what is general policy? That's everything I've got to do minute by minute throughout my day. And that policy thrives on love and tolerance and service, our AA code. Our good deeds should remain anonymous to the extent that we do not seek praise for living the life we should. And service is its own reward, or has been for me. You know, my happiness is byproduct of fulfilling that purpose I now have, which is to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. And that brings me that happiness. So those are some thoughts on personal anonymity and my recovery. But what about group anonymity and unity? This is a whole different thing. When I was kind of preparing for this, and I did prepare for it, you know, it's different. Like I said, it's different than telling my story, and I did some reading, and it brought me to the fact that I thought I should talk a little bit about group unity also. Tom already referred to my favorite comments on anonymity from Dr. Bob. I think it's very clear, and I love Tom didn't read this part, but I love the part where he says, it must be obvious to everyone who can read and understand the English language. You know, he's pretty forthright, but loving at the same time, that to maintain anonymity at any other level is definitely a violation of the tradition. That's what Tom referred to. And, you know, that made a lot of sense to me. I first read those quotes. There's several paragraphs, and you can find it easily in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, or just Google with Dr. Bob on anonymity, and it'll be there. And it's wonderful writing by him. And when I first read it on the back of a program at one of our area conferences. They had that, and it really struck me. It made sense to me. He makes it so simple for us just to understand the meaning. We really don't need to be talking about it a lot. He explains it so well that is what the level is of anonymity is at the group level and where it should be. I think there's little disagreement over the potential for damage done by anonymity breaks at the public level. Our history and that of earlier organizations proves that. I did read a while back in a Grapevine article this quote, the first anonymity breaks are a good deal like the first drink. It isn't the damage that the first one does by itself, it's where it leads. And Tom kind of referred to that too. If one person violates the traditions and nothing terrible happens, maybe the next person will do it and because they think they can get away with it without any terrible repercussions. But even with the most sincere intentions, and we always operate on good intentions, don't we? We don't know where it's going to lead, and I think that's very dangerous. But when sharing at the group level or in general service, based on Dr. Bob's clear interpretation of Tradition 12, I use my full name. Not everyone does, and that's okay. It's caused from some lively discussions about the traditions, and that's always good. And that's how I learned. That's how I learned what these were going to mean to me and how I was going to implement these in my life. My home group is a combination of 2 weekly closed literature studies and a monthly open speaker meeting with a potluck. I think this balance has contributed to our steady growth from 6 original members to sometimes over 60 in attendance. We focus on the solution and welcome newcomers. We celebrate sobriety anniversaries. We laugh during our business meetings. And don't take ourselves too seriously. We had some new members recently, and every one of them has come to the business meeting and said, this doesn't seem right. You're laughing. You're having a good time here. What's wrong with this? So anyway, you know, we get to know each other. We use last names. It's not a problem. Anonymity is where it should be in our group. Business meetings are a great place to practice principles before personalities, too. Another side of this tradition. You know, my group recently voted to run an ad on a local website announcing our monthly potluck speaker. And there was some discussion about that. People ask good questions, though. They ask questions about, isn't that a, you know, is that promotion rather than attraction? And doesn't that break anonymity at the public level? And the questions were valid, and the answers came from these principles. And people should never fear approaching Alcoholics Anonymous in search of help. And once they get here, they should never fear using their voice once they become members. So well, we decided together that the group should make its presence known to the community in this new way, and that will make a point to welcome everyone who comes to us. So we have to continue to ask ourselves, how attractive are we, and where do we draw the line between attraction and promotion, and are we filling the primary purpose of carrying the message to everyone? There's always room for improvement, but we do a pretty good job. Our members exercise personal sacrifice for the greater good at the group level. And it's not just our home group members. It's people that visit our meeting and are willing to help clean up afterwards. And all this is about self-sacrifice. It's giving a little bit of ourselves for the fellowship as a whole. To keep the door open. You know, I still wash coffee cups after the meeting, and that's probably the most fun part. You know, people come in the kitchen and we can talk and chat, and it's great. It's great. And I think that's just as rewarding as it was in early sobriety. So I want to be just a part of. I want to be a part of my home group and a part of my district and a part of my area and a part of this wonderful worldwide organization. It's just amazing to me. You know, it's such a wonderful weekend and a great way to get a spiritual boost for me and to reinforce my beliefs about what this is. It's just such a blessing. Such a blessing. So it's not just about not using my name in public. It's about learning to give up a few things. In order to foster unity at the group business meeting, I need to give up the need to always be right. I can take a back seat and trust the process at the district meeting and stop creating controversy or seeking attention or personal glory. I need to mind my own business and do the job in front of me as best I can. When the area assembly passes an action with which I don't agree, I should respect the group conscience and support the decision. All this is about being a part of, which is about humility, which equals anonymity for me. These actions don't come naturally to me as an alcoholic. These attitudes are the result of patient members like you teaching me about humility through their words and actions. My favorite definition of humility is found in step 5. To those who have made progress in AA, it amounts to a clear recognition of who and what we really are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. I remember many years ago, I was a hippie. I made that conscious decision I made to choose that lifestyle. But I remember that was a long time ago, and I dropped out of college because I truly didn't know what to do with my life. I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And here I am these many years later, absolutely sure of what I want to do. You know, I have a purpose now, and that's to be with you and carry the message as best I can. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm uniquely suited to helping other alcoholics. You know, what? How great is that? How cool is that? You know, I know what I'm supposed to be doing. But in order to get to that and to perform those functions effectively, I have to stay right size. I have to adopt this principle of anonymity in all areas of my life. So I recognize my deficiencies through working the steps, and I ask God to remove those, or at least get them into remission so I can be of maximum service. Again, do I carry, Tom touched on this, you know, once I have my spiritual feet on the ground and become active in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't care who knows that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, so I try and carry this into my workplace a bit. You know, I always have literature with me, and people at work know that I'm not, if not in Alcoholics Anonymous, they know I don't drink because they see me at the social functions and I'm not drinking. And you know, it gets talked about, and that's fine because people know where to come then. And over the years, some people have come to me, and some have stayed, some have gone to meetings, some have stayed, some have not. None of that's up to me. I just have to be available and carry the message as best I can. How about in my home? I'm very fortunate to have a wonderful, loving husband who also happens to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We believe that God brought us together and God lives in our home. However, there are times when I'm sure I put my welfare before the common welfare of the marriage. And there are times when my personality becomes paramount to any spiritual principles. You know, this is throughout my life. This happens. So there are times when it seems so important to get my point across that I won't let a subject drop. Or as Ken says, my husband, there are times when I have to bite my tongue. And there are times when Nancy has to bite hers. All this has to ties into anonymity for me. All of it, being right size, finding my place, performing as best I can in that moment. So it's about the weak concept. It's about give and take. Tom talked a little bit, too, about how AA's relation to the outside world has changed through social media. About the time that I got invited to do this, we got some emails through our delegate sent by Jim. I mentioned him before, the PI coordinator. And there's just wonderful information there on anonymity now and a new resource called at AA.org called Anonymity, a Vital Spiritual Principle. So if you want to read more about this and learn more about this, we certainly can't cover the whole thing today. You know, I try to give it a little general information and then a little personal take on this. But if you need a place to start, that's a wonderful resource there. And in general service, things have changed too over the years. When I was sober for a few months, I had to do some jail time behind my last, what I hope is my last OWI. And people like you brought meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous into that jail, and I'm forever grateful for that. And at that time, I got out. My first sponsor was one of the people that came into that jail. And when I first got out, I was out about a week, and she said, come on, we're going back in. And she dragged me into, and I'm still doing jail meetings to this day many, many, many years later. But the point of this regarding anonymity is simply that there was no clearances. We went in, we had to sign a sheet, but other than that, we just went in and did our thing and came back out again. Now it's so different. In the state of Wisconsin, and there, for all types of institutions, there are clearances, and they're now instituting a regulation whereby the inmates are going to have to refer us to us as Mr. or Miss or Mrs. with our last names. You know, is that an anonymity break? I don't think so, because I see that as being at the group level. You know, you're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. But some people find that, they find they're uncomfortable with that, you know. And I guess there's a job for everybody in AA. If you find, you know, that compromises something or some spiritual principle for you and you can't do that kind of work, there's plenty of work to be done. There's plenty of work to be done in other areas. So we just keep trudging along, and as Tom said, we're never perfect about any of this. I love that line about bumping up against them instead of breaking them. It's wonderful. But ultimately, the spiritual principle of anonymity dictates that we not be focused on personal gain, power, or prestige. Of course, we do personally gain a great deal. You know, my ultimate gift of freedom and its attendant privileges, ability to give, gives us to serve God. How lucky are we? We're so lucky to have found this. And we don't have to take credit for any of it. Our good deeds do remain anonymous. So by embracing the spirit of anonymity in all areas of my life, as the long form of the tradition so beautifully states, and Tom said, I hope to forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. Thank you for your attention. God bless. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Nancy. And I'll give you our final speaker, Beth G. from Colorado.
Hey, everybody. I'm Beth G., and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here and grateful to be sober. I have notes, too. My sobriety date is September 15th, 1987, and my home group is Saturday morning book study up in Woodland Park in Colorado. It's 20 miles west of Colorado Springs. We're up in the mountains. Our house is at 8,700 feet elevation. Beautiful little place in a wonderful community in Great AA. I have to tell you that this is my first international, and last night I don't think I've ever felt so small and so beautifully, perfectly small. This has been amazing. So I just found out 2 weeks ago that I was doing this. It seems the email that went out in April didn't get me. They were missing a digit. I got this cute little, well, my phone rang, and it was from New York, and I didn't know who it was, and so I let it go to voicemail, and it was someone from GSO saying, well, we haven't gotten your acceptance letter. I'm like, called them back, and I'm so sorry, I don't know what you're talking about, and then I think I was numb for about the next 3 hours. So I went to the dictionary. I decided to kind of go back to basics a little bit with this, and I looked up anonymity. And it basically said being anonymous, which I was like, really? So I looked up anonymous. And it has three entries. The first one, without any name acknowledged as that of author, contributor, or the like. Or two, of unknown name, whose name is withheld. Number three, lacking individuality, unique character, or distinction. And my gut went, okay, there we go. That's it. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a 20-year-old punk kid. I was and am an only child. I had the It's All About Me with a shot of steroids between my alcoholism and being an only child. I had no concept of thinking of anyone other than myself. If you had the life I had, you'd do what I do. You would drink like I drank, you would behave like I behave, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and if I had a friend who was going through a hard time, I'd make that about me too. Oh, my friend, you know. I had no concept of we, none at all. My first sponsor, and if I use names today, I have permission to use those names. My first sponsor has since passed by about 7 years ago. Her name was Marge Smith. And when we started working together, it was under several conditions. My 90 and 90 started after I left in rehab, and I had to go to Young People's. I had to go to a big book study. I had to go to a 12 and 12, blah, blah, blah. The women's meeting, that one pissed me off more than anything. And then, by the way, you need to get in service. And so I washed ashtrays at a downtown group in Colorado Springs. So when I heard about the traditions, my first several years, I'll be honest with you, I hated them. I hated them. I wanted to leave the meetings. They were boring. And the truth was, is I couldn't talk about myself when those were the topic. It's the truth. I wanted to talk about what happened to me. And I didn't get to do that when that was the topic. You know, and I went through a phase where I didn't go to meetings for 5 years, and I don't recommend that. The end result of that was pretty ugly. I have three children that are grown and gone and on their own who have never seen me with a drink, but my living amends to them is just as great as if I would have, not coming to meetings and working this program and being in the middle. I crawled back to the rooms about 11 years ago, and suddenly I had a willingness to learn absolutely everything this program had to teach. I got that I don't need a drink to be in this illness and to be that tornado in people's lives. And I became teachable in a way I had never been. And I have not worked a perfect program by any means, but I have worked my tail off since then because it scared me to no end. I don't ever want to go back to that. So suddenly a willingness to learn about our traditions and our concepts and the different, you know, spiritual principles, you know, came about. And for me, I think a lot of our spiritual principles are kind of like a stone. You know, if you look at it one way and you just twist it a little bit, it looks a little bit different. I think our principles are very multidimensional and not so flat. And anonymity is no exception to that. So a couple of stories. I loved that our other two panelists talked about what Dr. Bob said. You know, we want to be anonymous, but not so anonymous that we can't find each other within the fellowship. In 2008, I was a host chair for the state convention in Colorado Springs. And everybody in the Springs pretty much knows me as Beth G. I've gone by that consistently. And we had a speaker there that came up to me and was a little passionate about this. We don't stay anonymous, you know, with each other. You should be giving your last name in the rooms. And I turned around and I pointed right back at him. And I said, that tradition protects me from not giving my last name if I don't want to. I am a single mother with three babies, and not all of us are well. I don't want my last name out. Period. I'm still Beth G because I'm still kind of on that stance. It's our choice, and that's my point. You know, I don't mind if other people give their last names. That's fine. But don't corner me to give mine. You know? So I love Dr. Bob, but I was like, on that one. And the truth is, for me, and I'll add this, you know, if I'm truly in the middle of this program, truly in the middle, going by Beth G does not make me invisible. I have had things happen in my life where I needed help. I had a daughter that was dying of alcoholism, and all I had to do was make one phone call, and a group of women were at my door with a meal and a meeting so I could sit on the floor and sob and talk about what happened. So word can get out on how to support and find us, I believe, if we're truly in the middle. I had the opportunity, I don't know how long ago it was a few years ago. I was a GSR for a period of time, and I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous in a way I'd never had before, going to the assemblies and learning about the concepts. And then I was appointed by our DCMs to be the public information chair for our district, and we had not had a PI chair in years. I was scared to death to step into this role. Our district is pretty beefy. It's pretty big. It's two counties. And so I sat down with our outgoing Area 10, which is Colorado PI chair, and his name is Ken P. And I had all this outdated literature, and he sat down and he went over all kinds of things and said, you might want to, you know, PI is so vast. He's like, pick two or three things, build your committee, and go after those things. And that's what we did. But he explained something about anonymity that clicked for me. And he said, to truly live anonymously, and this was touched on by our other speakers, we have to be within humility. Now, later on, I go back and I read, you know, the 12th tradition and the 12 and 12, and what does it talk about? Humility through the whole thing, but I'm telling you, it was one of those things that I had never seen there before. And for me, humility means that I'm no greater than and I'm no less than. Right? So the person with 60 years of sobriety is no greater than or less than the person shaking in the back with dried vomit on their chin. We're all equals in here. So the concept of humility brought anonymity a completely different dimension for me. You know, if I'm going on Facebook and I'm talking about being clean and sober for so many years, even though I'm not mentioning I'm an alcoholic or a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, where's the humility in that? I don't know. And I can't say that other people do that are wrong. For me, it's tooting my horn of some sort, and it's not appropriate. And even using some of the same verbiage as Tom touched on still lets the cat out of the bag, right? So that simple explanation from Ken made a huge difference in my recovery and how I show up and how I participate. And I would love to stand up here and tell you that I have been a perfect example of how to live within the anonymity and the spirit of it, and probably the quite opposite. The best I learned about our traditions is by breaking them all. And in the beginning, you know, I've got two friends here that were here the day I walked in, and it is so incredible to see both of them here. But I remember shooting my mouth off in meetings in the beginning and literally at times being pulled by my ear going, honey, we don't do that here, and this is why. You know, they cared more about the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous than they did my feelings. That doesn't mean I didn't get pissed and walk away for a while, but. How am I doing on time? 11? Oh, okay. I will share probably my deepest lesson around anonymity. It was the year 2008. My father was diagnosed with cancer. I'm an only child, as I mentioned, and I was a single parent.
So my father was battling cancer, and then it was his heart, and then it was his kidneys over a several month period of time. And daddy was always big, strong daddy to me. And yes, I'm 48 years old and he's still daddy. And I had a daughter who was dying of alcoholism. I was driving home from that 2008 state convention and I got a call and she had relapsed and she was spiraling. And so for the next 6 months, to be honest with you, I didn't know who was going to go first. And I knew none of it was about me. I'd done enough of my step work at that time, and I knew it was about playing the role I was assigned and to show up. But from May of 08 to May of 09, I will tell you I cried almost every single day and went to a meeting almost every single day. And I talked about what was going on in my life. I got a lot of love and a lot of support. And like I said, at one point, a group of women showing up at my door with a meal and a meeting. And they held me up when I couldn't stand. But here's what I did. Intentions golden or not, I didn't realize that my daughter would be walking into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 16, and the rooms knew her story before she did. I shared too much, and I gave the shame that we all walk in with as newcomers a big shot of steroids for my own child, and I was crushed. It was the last of my intentions. It truly was, but boy, if that didn't tell me to keep my mouth shut and go back to sharing in a general way. You know, we learned to go to separate meetings. We learned to kind of, you know, and another piece of that that's separate but connected was as people walked up and go, oh, you're Beth's daughter. And not, oh, you're the newcomer. Welcome. So there were some pretty powerful lessons for us, you know, in all of that. And I hold that lesson dear. I mean, I was thinking about it last night and teared up. I will share with you that little bean of mine is 22 years old and 6.5 years sober and carries an incredible message. AA has done for her what I could not do. And I will tell you that she has grown to be a woman in her own recovery, her own path, and she has what I want. She has what I want. Does anonymity sometimes hurt us? I don't know. I posed the question. I was having a conversation with a friend after I realized 2 weeks ago that I was doing or participating in this talk today. And some questions that came out of that conversation and for me, and I don't have the answer, so don't come up to me afterwards and go, ah! When it comes to the safety of our members, people have a pass. How do we live within that anonymity and look out for our own? What do we do for those who have violent crimes in their background but sincerely want to get sober? How do we protect them? I don't know. I mean, that's tough stuff and touchy topics, I think. But things to think about. You know, how do we walk in the door and ensure that everyone has the same equal chance, no matter what they've said or done, to recover from that helpless state of mind and body? I've learned a lot about the me versus we. I think I've grown a lot there, and I still fall short. And even again, sometimes at the best of intentions, I still shoot my mouth off and have to go back and clean it up. You know, so like I said, I'm not the poster child of this by any means. You know, have I slipped and said things about people in front of other people? Yeah, I have. Have there been consequences? Absolutely. Absolutely. Do I see the lessons today? Do I take them to heart? Absolutely. Absolutely. So, lacking individuality, unique character, or distinction for me equals the true essence of humility. What is our solution, and how do we grow in this? How do we ensure that we protect this? I mean, I think our other two panelists talked about, and you know, how critical it is that we, in our history and what Bill and Bob have shared, how much we need to protect this piece of us. And I think it gets down to sponsorship. I really do. I think sponsorship is key. And for me, you know, I'm sponsored and I'm held accountable in our principles. When I sponsor women, we go through the steps, then we go right into the traditions, and then we go right into the concepts. I believe that understanding our history
And those two things combined and carrying that with our message. How do we carry the message of anonymity within? Why it's so important? I've heard people say, well, it's my anonymity. Really? Me versus we. You know, what I do affects us. I may be the only big book somebody sees, right? In fact, I don't have another of our stickers on my car deliberately anymore because I have a turbo engine. I'm being honest. I like my car and I like to go fast up the pass. I'll close with this, and this is out of AA Comes of Age, page 131 to 132. In my belief, the entire future of our fellowship hangs on this vital principle. If we continue to be filled with the spirit and practice of anonymity, no shoal or reef can wreck us. If we forget this principle, the lid to Pandora's box will be off, and the spirits of money, power, and prestige will be loosed among us. I am positive that AA's anonymity is the key to long-time survival. Thanks for letting me share today.